You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, I am Humberto Juarez Rocha, and I am an editor at Opus, where I cover carbon and biodiversity markets. Today's topic of discussion, and it frankly has been for some years now, is the European Union's Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, also known as the CBAM. With me today is Dan Maleski, CBAM lead at Redshaw Advisors and an expert on all things CBAM. Dan, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience and give us a general overview of what the CBAM is?
It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Dan Maleski. I lead the CBAM efforts at Redshaw Advisors. And really what that means is I translate the complexity of this acronym into what I like to call English, right? How does it actually work? How does it impact companies? And how is it going to evolve? The CBAM, it's discussed in multiple perspectives, from a compliance perspective, from a financial risk perspective. At the end of the day, what the CBAM is here to do is effectively level the playing field between EU domestic industry, which is exposed to a cost of carbon via the EU's emissions trading system, and importers into the EU who are not exposed to a cost of carbon. Now, why this matters is, well, because EU industry is indeed having to bake in quite a significant cost onto their finished goods as a result of them being required to have a cost of carbon. Now, the EU CBAM comes in to, as I mentioned, correct this asymmetrical landscape at the end of the day by requiring the same robust reporting and costs associated with carbon that EU domestic industry has to anyone looking to really import into the bloc that's exposed to CBAM. Now, given the EU 27 member bloc is the world's largest importer, period. Well, this policy has the impact of having nearly everyone in the world trying to comply and talk about it, which is part of the reason why it's so controversial. It's not just the EU CBAM; it's resulting in a lot of responses because it's such a global policy. So that's a bit about me and what the acronym I'm sure everyone's been seeing a lot is.
Thank you. And CBAM is definitely something we've been covering here at Opus for a long time over the years. It's going into force starting next year, but it's been online since October 2023 as companies file quarterly reports and file information on their emissions. There is an expected announcement today from the EU regarding the Steel and Metals Action Plan. We haven't seen it come out yet, but I hear that there are some documents kind of going around displaying what the EU's strategy is when it comes to steel and metals. The CBAM covers steel, iron, it covers a number of sectors, iron, cement, steel, aluminum, electricity, and fertilizers, and hydrogen. Regarding the Steels and Metals Action Plan, what can we expect? What is the expected announcement, and how will this figure into the CBAM?
Yeah, it's a great question. And to elaborate why this potential announcement is so impactful, it might be beneficial just to quickly take a step back on talking about where CBAM is and potentially some of its design flaws. You mentioned that CBAM is going to begin its financial impact and start with the requirement of something called CBAM certificates in 2026, which is going to be requiring the companies who are import into the EU to be exposed to a cost of carbon, which is fine, right? It helps level the playing field out a bit. There's an issue, though, which is what happens to industry that's trying to export out of the EU? Imagine I'm a German manufacturer and I'm producing my steel, and because I'm in the EU, I have to comply with the EU ETS, and as a result, maybe 10 to 15% of my entire cost of steel is carbon. In the EU, that might be fine because, my domestic competitors also have that cost of carbon. And now as a result of CBAM, the foreign competitors are also having that cost of carbon. But if I want to, let's say, export that steel to, let's say, the US, therefore, I'm going to be competing in a foreign market that well, has no competitors having a cost of carbon. And as a result, I will be at a disadvantage. And so this is why one of the major flaws that we've been hearing a lot about from industry players is the lack of any export protection measures. Now, this is quite crucial for the overall health of the EU industrial economy. Most heavy industry relies really on export solutions. I mean, if I look at fertilizer, for example, fertilizer is a very cyclical sector. And so depending on the global planting seasons, it might be a fire sale in Europe during time that Europe is planting. It's agriculture. But during its off seasons, it might be not a very good time to sell fertilizer in Europe. Therefore, I might try and access the North African agriculture markets or the American agriculture markets, right? So having these what we call export valves to kind of these levers to press can allow industry to be healthy. It can also allow them to be profitable because some sectors such as steel needs a fairly high capacity utilization to be profitable. And so going back to the CBAM here, if the CBAM doesn't have any export protection measures, the result is going to be basically all EU sectors and industry that's exposed to this regime will be drastically uncompetitive in export markets. And as I just mentioned, export markets are needed. And so the result of that would be a fairly large impact to the detrimental impact to EU industry. So this proposed announcement that the EU is maybe going to make today is potentially going to be hinting at the EU moving forward with an export rebate. So that's something that we'll be watching closely. And a lot of our clients would be very happy to hear if the EU does indeed move that way.
Definitely. And export rebates, as I understand them, correct me if I'm wrong here, is when, say, government provides tax refunds on products, on domestic products specifically designed or set for exports. And also, does this fit into, I mean, in the coming years, we'll see the CBAM being gradually phased in as industry receives fewer and fewer allowances. Are these two linked, essentially, potential? Are there export rebates now, or is that what's being proposed right now?
You've touched on a few points of how an export rebate works. I mean, the main takeaway is it softens the negative consequences of an asymmetrical competitive landscape where one company incurs a cost of carbon and another company does not incur a cost of carbon. Because if it's just those two companies, let's say, competing for a contract, naturally, the one who has a cost of carbon will be at a significant disadvantage. An export rebate is trying to mitigate that in foreign markets. Now, the reason an export rebate does not exist right now, and the reason the CBAM did not ship out with an export rebate is because doing so could enter the territory of protectionist and WTO concerns. Because at the end of the day, if I'm providing my industry with what you know some might say, my competitors might say, as additional support, this additional financial support, I might not think that's quite fair. And if I'm a competitor or a competing country, I might take that to the WTO and challenge that, which is a very real threat that the EU is conscientious of, which is why they have been quite conservative with how they might roll out export protection measures.
Very, very interesting, Dan. And talking about recent updates, there's been a lot of talk and discussion regarding the CBAM. I hear from a couple of people who are still learning about the CBAM that there's talks of a delay. From my coverage, and I kind of wanted to ask you, actually. So I think people are thinking of this. You mentioned CBAM certificates earlier today. Those were slated to go into sale next year. The commission, I believe, is proposing that to start now in February 2027. So I think people are missing or maybe not sure about what this delay, if a delay at all. What does this mean? And how does this affect the market, the timeline of the CBAM?
Yeah, no, and look, you know, to be fair, these are very good questions to have. I mentioned when I was introducing myself, I tend to act as a translator because most of the time people are quite confused with how the CBAM works, how it's going to evolve, why it's here, and its impact. And so it's completely justifiable to have, it's just scratching your head trying to figure all this stuff out. So the CBAM itself is not delayed. The obligation to procure CBAM certificates will still be in 2026. It's just the ability in the forceful nature of actually procuring them will go in 2027. So best way to think about this is exposure will be incurred in 2026. Cash will flow at the door in 2027. As a result, CBAM itself doesn't necessarily change. Rather, it is simply just shifted back slightly with the incursion of costs still being in 2026.
And something I've been trying to understand has been, at least from how I understand it today, CBAM certificates were going to be based on the weekly average auction price of EUAs starting in 2026. With the potential delay to CBAM certificate sales to 2027, I read something in the legislation or in the proposal about being based on the 2026 EU ETS EUA price. What does that mean in terms of the price and how it relates to the EU carbon allowance price?
Oh, this is typically the part of the conversation where a lot of my clients start tearing their hair out. Because I had a call with one of my CBAM experts, one of my partners, about 20 minutes ago, and we were talking on this exact topic. And we live and breathe CBAM all day, and we were, you know, going back and forth. Is it this? Is it that? Because specifically in the omnibus proposal, there's a paragraph that contradicts itself. And so depending on your interpretation, right, it's in the eye of the beholder. One could go either way. And from our perspective, and our head of research is still doing some background context on this, but from our perspective, when I have my imports in 2026, those imports would be based on the quarterly auction price of the EU ETS at the time. And so therefore, there would be four quarters with four different underlying prices. Now, once 2027 starts and once we get rolling with the typical CBAM period, that would shift back to weekly. And so again, I know it's a bit complex, and you know, one of the things I like to say is America innovates, China replicates, Europe regulates, and this final example of CBAM certificates is a perfect example of that. But quite complex, quite regulated, and a lot of my clients are feeling that concern of complexity.
No, definitely, it's hard to keep up with all the post changes. What is currently the matter? And actually, you mentioned the omnibus bill, and I believe that was unveiled in late February 26. There was a lot of talk, and especially from EU Climate Commissioner Wopke Hoekstra, on simplifying, streamlining a lot of regulation, and making the burden easier on smaller businesses. The latest we covered was that it is now the de minimis value, or basically what triggered a company to comply with the CBAM, was at around 100-150 euro shipment value, which I took it to understand meant virtually everyone. That has now been proposed to change to a weight tonnage equivalent of carbon emissions. Can you tell us a bit more about what that is? And also, is that a significant change from the 150 former value?
When CBAM was initially rolled out, its de minimis threshold was 150 euros, which is incredibly small. And as a result, around 200,000 importers were caught in the initial scope of CBAM. Now, this, again, from the get-go, was anticipated to change. If you go back to why CBAM exists, it's to mitigate carbon leakage. And carbon leakage primarily only affects companies who have a cost of carbon, right? And so if you look at the EU, only around, call it 10,000 installations are exposed to the EU ETS, meaning that they emit more than 20,000 scope 1 thermal megawatts a year. Therefore, they are forced to participate in the scheme. One could argue it really is just those large installations, some of their major suppliers, and some folks who provide their precursors that are genuinely exposed to a cost of carbon, and therefore generally required to have a cost or a carbon leakage protection measure, not the entire EU economy. And if you bring the threshold low enough, you're going to get the entire EU economy. And so the question then arises: is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, how deep, how far do we want that threshold to go to potentially capture a large chunk of companies who aren't generally exposed to carbon leakage? And so the commission decided that, yeah, the 150 de minimis was too small, and they raised it. That's their line of thinking. I think it's rather pragmatic. I completely agree with where they're coming from. And I think the change was definitely taken quite well across the sector.
And also on the talk about changes to the CBAM, since the CBAM was implemented, we heard about the potential expansion of the scope of the CBAM. Currently it covers, you know, those sectors I mentioned at the beginning. But there is talk about it including chemicals and other downstream products. What is the latest regarding, there's talks of a potential review of to assess the extension. What is the latest timeline looking like for these steps?
The leaked proposal I was mentioning earlier mentioned that the commission could be coming out with their what we call the revisionary CBAM report as early as Q4 2025. Now, obviously, that's a draft leak, so we'll see if that is the date they stick with. And I mean, the EU has a lot on their plate right now. They have a lot of work to do with CBAM, a lot of plate spinning. And so that, I'm sure that report is fairly fluid with when it might get released. But at the end of the day, it's not a when, it's an if. Oh, sorry, it's not an if, it's a when. That report is coming and CBAM will be looked at when it comes to the expansion of its scope. Now, the scope that they'd be looking at is, again, go back to the EU ETS. It is, well, in the EU ETS, what is covered on the carbon leakage list? And carbon leakage list encompasses around 93% of all industrial emissions. So not all of those sectors will face the same carbon leakage concerns. For example, cement and steel are going to be quite high on the carbon leakage list, while I'm sure there's other, you know, paper and pulp maybe that might not be as high. They still experience it, but not in this, it's not apples and oranges. And so CBAM will expand. What it will expand to, again, you can look at the carbon leakage list, things such as paper and pulp, as I mentioned, but also ceramics, glass, refining, organic chemicals, polymers, and much more. CBAM is also potentially going to expand sectorally. So with the EU ETS, as it covers power, and power has no free allocation, the cost of carbon is passed through power. And so therefore, industrials and installations in the EU will have both direct and indirect exposure to carbon, right? Direct because of the EU ETS and indirect because of the power prices they buy are higher, not only because of the merit order of the EU power complex, but also because if I'm using lignite or coal to power to generate my power, I'm going to have to pass on that cost of carbon. Therefore, indirect emissions is something that CBAM will be looking at when it comes to the expansion for other sectors. As of right now, direct and indirect emissions only cover cement and fertilizer, but that is going to be something that they will be looking at to potentially expand.
I see. And do you think most of, I mean, depends on the assessment review of the potential scope extension. I mean, do you think more sectors will be included before 2030?
Yeah, I mean, I'd assume so. So there will be a few on ramps, as I like to call them, of when the CBAM will be looking to expand its scope once in 2026 or around 2026, because I'm sure with the EC they might be quite fluid with these timelines, and then once in 2030. So those are the two main on ramps of sectors being included in CBAM, and that's when I'd be looking to watch out for announcements.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the exposure to carbon prices, I mean, I think today we're seeing EUAs, the benchmark contract of December 2025, trading at around low 70 euros per metric ton. I'm thinking now about policies that the EU put into place in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, like, say, Repower EU, especially the front loading of auctions that were supposed to take place in the second half of the year, of the decade, are now took place earlier this in the past 2 years. I mean, are you worried about higher carbon prices in the leading to 2030?
Yeah, I mean, that is top of mind for my sophisticated clients in any financial institution we work with, is carbon prices are going to get significantly higher. The main reason why is simply just the design of the market. And so it's a cap and trade market, a cap referring to the absolute cap of allowances created. And so and as a result of the linear reduction factor, which squeezes the market year on year on year, and it's just supply and demand dynamics, less allowances you have, the higher the scarcity they become. And therefore, it's a fairly large driver of carbon. Now, right now, the EU ETS is long, but that is expected to switch. We're expected to see the market switch to short in the coming years, with RePowerEU playing quite a large factor of when and why. Because on the back end of RePowerEU, there will be a significant tightening. Pair that with financial institutions typically being quite clever and hedging for that, similar to what we saw with the MSR, we're going to see quite a significant upswing of carbon prices in the coming years. And so that's something that our clients are watching out for. And that's something that, I mean, we mentioned this before, you know, the MSR occurred, which is it's simply supply and demand dynamics. And so it's not looking at any fancy forecasts. It's or looking at anything of that nature when it comes to other commodities. The EU ETS is a completely different beast, where we know the supply when it comes to how we want to imagine this market going. You look at any of the, you know, I call them the 14 most reliable forecasts here in the EU, they're all one direction, one-way traffic. Carbon's going up in Europe.
Yes, and something we'll definitely be keeping an eye out on. Dan, I've seen the effects of, ever since the EU mentioned and legislated the CBAM, we've seen countries like the UK talk about implementing their own CBAM in 2027. I believe Australia might be looking into one, New Zealand as well. Tariffs is a word that comes in the news now every day, just given the state of affairs in the US. And I'm a bit curious. I know there have been previous attempts at a carbon border tariff in the US, both from Democratic and Republican legislators. And I'm kind of curious. I want to pick your brain on this. Do you think the US could implement or announce or do something akin to a US CBAM at the federal level? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think it's quite ironic that two Americans are sitting in London, mainly talking about EU policy, but also now switching to US policy. It's coming home for both of us, Humberto. But US, it's called BCAs, Border Carbon Adjustments. They are a very interesting story. So to provide a bit of background for anyone in the audience who is not a CBAM nerd like me, the US has no federal cost of carbon similar to what the EU has, right? And so if we look at the justification, why the CBAM is here, it is because simply the EU ETS incurs a cost of carbon on EU industry, right? That's across the board. As a result of that, there is an asymmetrical competitive landscape in Europe. So let's shift across the Atlantic. That doesn't really occur in the U.S. Now, it occurs sometimes at state levels, right? You have things like REGI, Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. You have the WCI. You have a few of these initiatives, right? And one could argue that these initiatives, I mean, REGI for sure, easily to argue that they could use a BCA. And even the WCI, Western Climate Initiative, they're actually the first ones who really poked away with the CBAM, a BCA with their power sector. And so from a state on state level, it's very justifiable for America potentially looking at a BCA. But from a federal level, that's taking CBAM or BCAs and using it more from a protectionist point of view. Because again, there is no federal cost of carbon in America. Now, the reason why this is especially controversial is because if the US did that, that would be a clear violation of WTO. And that's we talked about export rebates earlier. The reason the EU hasn't gone with an export rebate yet, I mean, they're looking at it, but they haven't gone, they haven't pulled the trigger yet, is because of WTO concerns. The issue is, does the US really respect the WTO anymore? I mean, there's many precedents I could look at it. You know, what they've been doing with the, I could be here for an hour. And that's not my specialty. There's WTO lawyers I can easily point in the right direction to, and they could have a lot more to say. But we're entering a different geopolitical atmosphere where countries and jurisdictions might even be using BCAs for their own intrinsic benefit, not simply for climate emissions, or not simply to manage their own asymmetrical competitive landscapes, rather to use it as an advantage. I mean, that is really protectionist. So it's apples and oranges when we talk about EU ambitions and interest on BCAs and CBAMs in America, north of, oh yeah, yeah. So again, I'm not a WTO lawyer, but more than happy to introduce you to a few.
That'd be great. And I'm really, really curious about what the next coming years will do for CBAMs, if other countries roll out their own versions, with what changes. We know the UK one changed. I believe they had glass included and ceramics that is now out. It seems like they will be matching the EU CBAM sector by sector. Dan, I want to thank you for joining us on this podcast. I've learned a lot today, and I think this is something that we will be definitely keeping an eye on. It seems to be evolving every month at this year so far. But yeah, I love having you on. Thank you for sharing your insights with us. And yeah, thank you for joining us today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.